Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Metro Raleigh Business Radio, where business leaders in Raleigh come to tell their stories.
Hello, welcome back to the Metro Raleigh Business Radio Show. I'm Ann Ravel-Petcher, your host, and I'm here today with my co-host, Cal Hackman. Hello, Cal. Did you have a great weekend?
A great weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty darn good, wasn't it?
It was.
I enjoyed mine, tell you that. Reed Powell, our producer. How are you, Reed?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Ann.
You ready for a great show?
I am.
I'm glad, because we're going to have one, whether you're ready or not.
I'm sure we are.
We have actually two gentlemen in the studio today whose companies or organizations are really pushing forward business in the Triangle region and actually throughout the whole state. I want to welcome, first of all, Fred Hathaway, who's the Managing Director of Entredot. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Ann. So glad to be here today.
So glad to have you here. And we also have Mark Dirks, who's with Beacon Technologies as the CEO and president. Hello, Mark.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm really good.
Glad to be here.
Why don't you tell us what Beacon Technologies is?
Beacon Technologies is a full-service web solutions company in Greensboro, North Carolina. We've been around for about 16 years, primarily working with web design development, digital marketing, and web hosting. The collection of all three of those together is all done in Greensboro, no outsourcing or anything like that.
There are quite a few web developers around these days. Tell us what makes you different.
Well, what makes us different is really the collection of those three. There's a lot of firms out there that do one of those. Maybe they do hosting, maybe they do web design development or digital marketing. But when you bring all three of those together in the same house, over time, they've all become very, very integrated. In the old days, you could do a website, design it, develop it, and you'd be done with it. But when hosting and digital marketing came and became part of the picture, it was important that they all are integrated. They all touch each other now. And as that world has evolved, now we're at a point where it's all about analytics. It's not about as much what's happening about the website or the hosting or the digital marketing as, now how do I use all that data underneath my website?
Right. So how do you take the brochure beyond the brochure and make it something that is actually useful to people, right?
Yeah. I mean, people are spending money on digital marketing and they want to know, how do I get the most out of all that? How do I get more return on my marketing investment? Where traditional markets, billboards, print, it's hard to tell that. Now it's expected, the digital market, isn't it?
Well, and you guys recently actually developed a product, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not just website development here.
No.
We also are software developers. So tell us about your new product, which is called GA Fusion.
GA Fusion. Yeah, it's so funny. I could probably talk for 2 hours, and I know the show's short, but I am very excited about this product. GA Fusion is... I've been saying it's the culmination of my career.
Really?
I went to school at Wake Forest. I studied mathematics, computer science at Kansas State University. And this brings it all together, finally, where GA Fusion is actually the only product in the country we know of right now that allows in-store sales, in-store transactions to be put under Google Analytics. Right now, Google Analytics only kind of rides underneath your website, and it tells you, where are people coming from? Are they coming from paid? How are they finding your website, and what are they buying? And it's kind of been happening in a vacuum. It's like everybody knows that you can find that information under your website, but people forget about that all that advertising also drives people to stores.
Physical stores. Bricks and mortar kind of thing. So you are able to actually join the data surrounding purchases, whether they're online or in a bricks and mortar, is that true?
Exactly. In one spot now. And nobody does that. And we just got back from Chicago it was basically the big unveiling of this product.
Mm-hmm. And how was it?
It was awesome. I mean, I could not stop talking about it because everybody was like, really? You do that? In the same place?
And were at a conference, right?
Yeah, it was the Internet, it was the IRC, the Internet Retailer conference exhibition.
Right.
Mm-hmm. About 10,000 people there,
yeah, it's a big conference.
600 exhibitors, and it was just exciting because everybody's like, you're kidding me, you finally have this? I mean, you can do this now?
So who is it impacting the most, do you think, and how is it going to impact them in terms of their bottom line?
Yeah, the multi-channel retailers, the companies that have an online presence, like an online store and a brick and mortar store, you know, they're most of those companies, those retailers are making money online. They have revenue coming in online.
Sure.
Our larger clients are maybe seeing 20 to 30% of their revenue coming in through their store. I mean, through their online store. So that means 70 to 80% is happening in brick and mortar stores.
Yeah. See, who knew, right?
But they're advertising online. You know, they'll put up ads and they'll send out email. They have no idea how that is affecting their in-store sales. Well, now through GA Fusion, they can. They'll know that, hey, my emails or my paid advertising is actually generating X dollars in my stores. And what we're finding out, I mean, we took it out of beta in March, and the stores that are using it are already coming back saying, wow, I didn't realize how much those ads were generating in my stores. Mm. And so guess what? They're spending more money on digital marketing. Guess what? That's part of our business. Google, we're partners with Google, so Google is very, very happy with the fact that we're showing that spending money on Google advertising and other advertising is producing value.
Well, how does it work?
Well, it's pretty cool. I mean, it sounds simple, but it's really, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes the simplest things are the best ideas. But all we really do, it takes about 3 days to get this thing up and running. We install this tracking mechanism on your website, and all it's really doing is just looking for activity related to specific people or somebody doing something on your website, like they fill out a contact form or if they sign up for a wish list or they grab a coupon. We're just looking for that, and it's feeding it into our GA Fusion product real time. Hmm. On the backside, all the stores really need to do is give us either hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, however they want to do it, a feed through an XML feed. And it's a standard feed. Anybody has an IT department can really generate this. When they feed it to us, we automatically receive it, process it, match it up with what's going on online. Because the ideal thing is to find out what's happening. What are these people doing online before they go to the store?
Mm-hmm.
So we match that up, and then we mimic an online transaction into Google Analytics so that it all gets loaded in there.
Oh, okay.
And we've got all kinds of features planned down the road as we roll this thing out. It's, you know, it's a real product, so it's a plug and play model. So that means that, you know, they're just paying a subscription to use it.
So are you finding that more of the activities are taking place on mobile devices? I mean, I don't mean a laptop connecting to Wi-Fi, but I mean literally a tablet or a phone.
Oh yeah, the growth in the mobile side. I mean, we have hundreds and hundreds of clients, and we have a digital marketing department that works with all of those. And one of the biggest things is just the tremendous growth in the use of mobile devices.
Yeah, right.
Because people are sitting there watching TV now. And this is a cool thing for GA Fusion down the road is, you know, people are watching TV now and they've got an iPad in their hand.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So
yeah.
How are we going to start connecting those purchases? I see an ad on TV. I make the purchase right then,
right.
Or I go get a coupon, and then I go to the store and buy. It's starting to all get real close together. So it's exciting where this world is going, in my opinion. Very exciting. So,
yeah, I actually was watching a new show that came on the other night. It was actually, I can't remember the name of it. The name of it, I think, is so bad. But anyway, it's about the when the guys first started taking on IBM. I don't know, there's a new show about the guys who first started taking on IBM in the PC industry. It was not the Bill Gates story, but a whole other kind of take on. And at the very beginning, they said the name of the show. They said why they came up with that name. And then they said, now you're connecting with your devices, and we've got a whole separate page for you. So, and literally, all throughout the whole TV show, they're giving us prompts for our mobile devices. So, and of course, that's where the ads are coming in.
Yeah, it's only going to grow.
Yeah.
And that's what's fascinating to me is like you look at old marketing techniques, you know, where they sent out print or they sent you mail or they had billboards or even TV still. You can't really quantify what that's doing. We still have some clients that use TV and they'll go, oh, well, I'll say, how do you know that that is working, how those dollars are working? And they go, oh, well, we had a lift in sales in that area of the country where we were running those ads. But yet the expectation on the other side is if you talk web, they want to know specific, exactly, you know, how many dollars does this generate? So it's slowly migrating
over.
Yeah,
sort of a bit of sense of branding versus actually direct sales. Yeah,
I mean, and all of it affect. You know, the old days it used to be which channels affected sales.
Right.
Now everybody's starting to look at the all the channels together because you know a lot of people may come in, may see Facebook, then they maybe go to the website, then they may get an email.
Yeah.
So it's the collection of those that lead to a sale.
They always did say six impressions before somebody made a sale, right? So
it's just it's fun.
So let's talk a little bit about the evolution of the web.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, it's out there. We all play with it every day. You know, we go on, we look for stuff. We, like you say, you know, sometimes we look online, then we go out to shop. Sometimes we shop online. Talk a little bit about, you know, what's really happened with the web since, you know, Al Gore invented it.
Yeah, you were there at sort of the beginning with AT&T, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, what I love about this whole industry is that it's always exciting. It's always changing. And, you know, back in the mid-90s, I was labeled as the father of the global corporate intranet at AT&T. And it was...
It's your fault.
It sounds cool. It sounds cool, and it was a big accomplishment for me to be able to, you know, early, ahead of its game, to be able to help AT&T develop the intranet, which connected 150,000 employees worldwide.
Great.
Well, then in the late 90s, I was like, you know, I can do this on my own. I can go out and create a company, and I realize how hard it is to create a company. But we started out. Remember the old days? It was like website design.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Design a website, and remember how flat they were?
Oh,
they
sure.
were just pictures,
absolutely.
And
right.
fonts were horrible looking, and then it evolved, and it got better and better, and then all of a sudden, digital marketing came in. I mean, we started talking about SEO. We started talking about paid ads. Then we started talking about how, you know, video slowly started to grow, and bandwidth got bigger, and then, you know, you look out at Yahoo now, and everything's video. I mean, everybody, right. nobody has the attention span to read anymore. We tell our clients that. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to read this. If you got a video, though, they'll sit there and watch it for 10, 15, 20 seconds before they
yep.
do it.
Yep.
And then now it's evolved past all of that. You know, we've got all these channels. Social media. I mean, just think about it. 10 years ago, what social media looked mm-hmm. like. It wasn't there. Now you've got all of this analytics that's bringing it all together under one umbrella so that we can really study what people are doing. You know, and it's almost to a scary point, you know, from a privacy standpoint, but you can really, companies are doing this. They're when you come online, they're shopping or they're marketing to individuals now.
Oh, happens all the time.
Absolutely.
Happens all the time. You know, the minute I sign on to Yahoo or whatever, the ads for whatever I looked at in the last couple of days show up on the side.
It's one-to-one.
You know, they...
Sale on Black Flats.
Yeah.
And
you're like, how do they know? And you're like, because they've got all this data underneath there.
Exactly.
Now.
It's crazy.
But you know what I do find interesting, by the way, and I don't know, maybe you can figure out a solution to this for your clients, but they advertise even the products that I've already bought, which to me just seems like there's a missing link here someplace. You know,
yeah.
I was actually online 2 hours ago. I bought a product, I placed the order, I paid for it with my credit card, and I've already got the shipping confirmation. And the next time I sign on to Yahoo, somebody is trying to sell me that same product. And I'm like,
well, they're just not talking
you're
to
late,
each other yet.
You know?
Is that the deal, Mark?
It's the timing. You know,
yeah.
That data is there. It probably just hasn't reached the website yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
gotcha.
It's going to be there. In fact, when I was in, and I know I'm probably running along here, but one of the things that I heard at the IRCE conference in Chicago was how they're getting to a point now where, because you have your GPS.
Right.
And if you've been shopping around on the website and you're looking for certain things, let's say you're looking for shoes or a baseball mitt or something, they're going to have it down to a point when you're driving by that store where it's going to ping you.
Dick's has a sale on baseball.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It.
You were looking for this, and guess what? I got a 20% discount. If you just drop in, you're 1 minute away.
Yep.
I mean, it's going to get to that point where...
How are things like... I'm forgetting what they call it, the really close networks, like iBeacon kind of technologies. Is that impacting retail sales and data analytics at all?
I am not real familiar with the whole iBeacon thing.
Yeah.
I know that everybody's trying to narrow the gap between
the location.
Everybody's trying to find out where you are and are you close to my product?
Yeah.
And can I get something in your face so you'll buy it right now?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's going to get a little annoying down the road.
Yeah.
But
So speaking about buying your product, so let's talk about buying your product,
yeah.
GA Fusion. How do you reach your target market? Who is your target market?
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about this. It's, you know, we're a small company in North Carolina, and you know, this is a product that every multi-channel, omni-channel retailer can use. The more they know about the people that are buying their products and how they're spending their marketing dollars, the better, right? They're going to get a higher ROI. So any retailer out there that has an online store and a brick-and-mortar store, if you're just solely online, you're already getting everything under Google Analytics. So you really don't need GA Fusion. But most of the stores, most people have a brick-and-mortar, or they have a call center, you know, where people are calling in to order it. So as long as you have those two and you want to understand more about how all of the dollars you're spending on digital marketing are affecting your in-store sales, those are our clients. And you think about it, there's tens of thousands of retailers out there that can use this.
Sure, right.
What we did is we said, instead of everybody reinventing the wheel here and creating this one product, we'll create a product using, you know, I've cherry-picked a lot, and we have some really good technologists at Beacon. We started with software development. So we've developed this product that people can basically just plug into. Instead of everybody recreating it, just plug into this. We're charging a nominal fee, monthly fee, to use it. If you don't like it, we'll unplug it.
Yeah.
So far, nobody's unplugged.
That's great. Okay.
So it's and so our challenge is reaching all of the retailers around the country.
And it's not just retailers for you. I mean, that is true for GA Fusion, but you have other audiences as well, don't you?
True. We could go into a long story about how we're in higher ed too. And, you know, you think about it. Higher ed is no different than retail, right? I mean, they may throw a rock at me for saying this, but.
Yeah, it's very simple.
You want to know how many Georgia Tech t-shirts I own?
Right.
Yeah. No, but you think about it. When you apply to college, you know, they're marketing to you. They're spending marketing dollars. You fill out an application to buy.
Yeah.
The only difference is they've got this other step where they'll decide whether they're going to let you buy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to orientation, you sign up, and then they start billing you, right?
Right.
It's a transaction. So what
and they want you, as a customer for life.
Yeah.
Right. And you know? and we were
even when you're done buying, they still want you to send money.
And I've been out of Wake Forest since 1983, and I'm still buying merchandise from them.
I bet you are. Give
my kids, you know, maybe going there. But the neat thing about higher ed is, you know, we're probably in 30 some universities around the country, and they've locked onto this too already. They've said, yeah, this would be a great idea for us because I can even, you can narrow it down to different parts of the country where you're marketing, find out which marketing channels actually led to enrollment. Now I can plan my marketing budget.
So how many kids who looked at my websites actually applied? And you know, when I realized that somebody who has been to my website 6 or 7 times and I'm in the Northeast, and gee, I can see by their GPS that they're going on a college tour. Of all the schools my size, I wonder if I shouldn't be telling them, hey, stop in for a college tour today.
Yeah, and think about it. If you knew that these types of ads or your email or your Facebook page or something like that in maybe a certain area of the country was really driving applications and enrollment, because that's what it's all about is the enrollment side, right? They want to get their tuition paid.
Yeah.
If you knew which ads were working, and maybe certain pockets of the country were driving that.
Right.
Now I can spend those dollars a lot more wisely, right?
Right.
So we've got a couple of universities that are already using it. We haven't got a lot of data out of it yet that we can share, but I suspect that's going to be another hotspot for us at some point.
Well, next time you come back on, you're going to have to tell us the whole FAFSA story and a few other stories. But for now, if there's someone out there who's looking for a retail solution and they're interested maybe in GA Fusion, how would they get in touch with you?
They can go to our website, fill out a contact form. They can call us. They can go to our Facebook page.
So what is your website?
BeaconTechnologies.com Yeah, that's the best place to go.
Best way is
BeaconTechnologies.com.
Great.
And there's a whole section about GA Fusion on top of all the other things we do, but you can get right to it, and there's a form you can fill out. We do a Wednesday webinar at 2 o'clock every Wednesday Eastern Standard Time about GA Fusion. So you know, that's usually a good place to start to learn more about it.
Well, and you are a very inspirational entrepreneur.
Thank you.
And as we begin to talk about entrepreneurs and the inspiration that they need. I'm really excited to come back and have a chat here with Fred Hathaway about the kind of work you're doing over at Entredot. Fred, tell us a little bit about Entredot, would you?
Sure. Entredot is a nonprofit based in the Research Triangle Park of North Carolina. We were established about 4 or 5 years ago with a grant from the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation, where we studied why rural entrepreneurs were not as successful in launching businesses as those in our larger cities in North Carolina. And after traveling the highways and byways from the mountains to the coast, we basically concluded on their behalf that if somebody is wanting to start a business in an industry where there's a lot of mentors locally available to them, they have a much better chance of success. So if you think about going to some of our agrarian areas of the state, if you want to start a business that looks like some of the other agricultural businesses, you probably have 100 mentors. If you want to start a software as a service business, you might not have any for 100 miles.
Sure.
And so we said what you really need to do is pull the talent out of the cities to come and mentor these entrepreneurs, and particularly when they're starting businesses in newer industries that there's not as much density in their area. So that was kind of our roots. That's what we started with that. And we went from telling them that as a recommendation to doing it ourselves, first by opening physical innovation centers and now going with more of a web-based model.
Wow. So you have, how many centers do you actually have at the moment, physical centers?
We have consolidated everything down to one location in the Research Triangle Park. We're partnering with the Research Triangle Park Foundation because they have a vision of impacting entrepreneurship all across the state with some programs that they may be launching in the next year or two.
Excellent. That's fabulous. So how does your online program work? How do you connect people online?
Sure. We are very active on social media. Have been fortunate to grow our Twitter following by 3,500 people since January. And
that's great.
We're constantly pushing information out there that we find through content curation, where we'll go to Inc.com or Entrepreneur or Forbes Entrepreneur and call some of the best articles that we feel like line up with our own experience in entrepreneurship and mentoring and coaching these startups.
You have a really interesting audience. When you start talking about the kinds of articles that you do select to share, the kinds of information you're sharing, you're not working necessarily with high-growth companies.
Right. You know, in the classic blue ocean versus red ocean strategy, we feel like there are a lot of wonderful resources for high-growth companies here in the Research Triangle area, and they're well talked about in the media. We feel like, if anything, your traditional small businesses are not talked about as much.
Right.
A lot of your services businesses,
exactly.
A lot of your retail businesses, a lot of the businesses that are the backbone of our economy that you drive past all day, every day, and don't even notice them.
Exactly.
That's who we love to serve.
Same audience that we tend to reach a lot with Business Radio X, quite frankly. And I've heard, I can't remember who it was, originally talked to me about you guys. They talked to me about thinking of your audience as the Main Street businesses.
Exactly. Yeah, we like to position ourselves as an organization that provides education, mentoring, and other resources for businesses that 50 years ago were all located on the main street of any local city. And they were all contributing members of the local chamber. And they were not looking for a quick exit via IPO.
Right.
They were looking to start a business
and have it their whole lives,
that they could run for years and years and pass on to their offspring.
Sort of like Mark.
Yeah.
So how do you deliver these services that you're offering?
Yeah, we have a subscription-based model where the entrepreneurs sign up for a monthly package that includes access to our educational programs, whether those are workshops or webinars, or we're exploring using Google Helpouts as a new technology to deliver short educational sessions.
Google Helpout?
Yes. It's a product Google launched in October that very few people know about. That's something that we're very excited about. It's similar to the Hangout platform, but very educational in focus.
Oh, cool.
And then we have over 250 mentors on our rolls, categorized, filtered by, number one, have you ever started a small business? If not, you're not on our rolls.
Ah.
So that's very different than some of the other mentoring organizations in the area where someone may have big corporate experience, but they've never done the grassroots small business themselves and had to work on a shoestring budget. Secondly, we classify them based on industry background, and then thirdly, based on area of expertise. So we couple these mentors with these years and years of experience with these entrepreneurs who really need it.
So what are some of the biggest challenges that these Main Street entrepreneurs face today? I mean, we, like you say, we hear a lot about the challenges that the high growth companies, you know, and quite frankly, there it's mostly capital, 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 capital. What is it on Main Street?
I don't know if Ann shared this with you, but I had the opportunity as my very first job to work for the Turnaround Management Association in Chapel Hill as we launched it from a research project at UNC. And we studied why some businesses fail and why others are successful. And one of the biggest obstacles for a small business owner is learning how to delegate. So many founders start their businesses and they truly believe no one else can do what they do as well as they can do it, regardless of whether that is their primary motivation or something that they've just picked up along the way and are afraid that if somebody else is doing it, it's going to rock their world.
Yeah.
Right.
So delegation's a big one. One of the other ones related to that is the value of seeking outside counsel. A lot of small business owners feel like they have been successful enough that they're not going to ask somebody who might give them advice that might not pan out.
Sure.
They'd rather trust their gut, their instinct. They're yeah. fiercely loyal to how do they feel about a decision yeah. they're making without necessarily the analytics and data that we just heard our previous guest talking about that drive a lot of mid-size and larger businesses in making their decisions.
Right.
The third thing that we run into consistently is they don't know their target market. They have never sat down and figured out who will buy it. It's kind of the field of dreams concept of, you know, as long as I'm a great technician and can make something wonderful, surely there's an audience for it. And, you know, Michael Gerber dispelled that years ago with the book The E-Myth and said, right. you know, most entrepreneurs are technicians seized with entrepreneurial fervor. They just don't know who they're going to sell to, but they're anxious to do it.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about the demographics of these Main Street entrepreneurs? I mean, the whole demographics of the United States is changing. I see, you know, lots of different folks,
sure.
you know, starting businesses. What are you seeing?
Yeah, we are running across probably 60% of the clients that we're serving, whom we call associates, are women between 35 and 55 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our own internal research says that many of them have either left the corporate world to pursue something that's always been on their heart, or, you know, in a stereotypical kind of way, and I don't mean to go there, but this is kind of our observation, a lot of them have children who are old enough now that they don't have to be there when they get home from school.
Sure, right.
They can, you know, pursue a hobby that can become a business, that become a family asset,
mm-hmm.
and they're excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the women demographic, we also find a lot of minorities. We are working actively with a lot of organizations that serve minorities. You know, a lot of us see, particularly in the construction industry, a lot of minorities
sure.
working in the
yeah.
construction industry.
Right. Right.
Because it's a great way, you know, to bootstrap your way to taking care of your family if you don't have a college education.
Right.
Or if you're not from here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of living the American dream.
Absolutely. So how do you reach these people? I mean, once you get them, it sounds like you have a really good system of staying in touch with them. But you know, how do they find you?
Yeah, we use some search engine marketing tactics. We also are extremely active, just feet on the street. All of the volunteers who work with my organization have personal marketing plans as to what networking events they're going to be attending and how often, and we try not to overlap with one another, because getting out and meeting attorneys and CPAs who are helping people incorporate businesses can be a source of referrals. But just like any other business, our greatest source of referrals are from our existing clients. You know, somebody who has a good experience with us tells a buddy of theirs that, hey, you should check out this organization. So really, word-of-mouth referrals are by far and away our best source of new associates.
Give us a case study.
Sure. We had the opportunity to work with a woman who had lots of children and decided to go back to school and learn about social media. And she started a business doing outsourced social media for other companies. And when she started with us a couple of years ago, it was just her. Within 6 months, she had 3 part-time interns working for her. And 12 months after that, she kind of graduated from our program. And, you know, at this day and time, has about 35 or 40 retainer clients.
Wow.
And 9 interns working for her and some part-time staff.
And what do you think she would tell you is the greatest thing she got from Entredot?
She says that there are 2 things. One is the value of the mentoring relationship. The second thing that she points out is actually the introductions that we make.
Cool.
We are willing to open up our address books and help these entrepreneurs meet the people that kind of are either the gatekeepers or the key centers of influence that allow them to significantly scale their businesses.
Great. Give her a shout out. What's the name of her company?
Yeah, it's Shelly Delacqua with Shelton Media.
Excellent.
So what happens if one of your Main Street non-high growth folks turns out to be really a high growth company?
Oh, darn, right?
You know,
right.
I mean, you know, just they didn't start out thinking that way, but either you look at them and say, you've got the next GA Fusion, you know,
right.
Or... they say I've got it.
You know, we're not antagonistic towards high growth by any stretch.
We don't keep people from making a lot of
money.
Right.
But again, going back to my turnaround days, a lot of people really don't plan for growth.
Right.
And we have a curriculum called 6 Steps of Success, which kind of guides the entrepreneur from that initial idea to fully commercializing that idea so that the business can run without them at the helm.
Excellent.
And we try and walk every entrepreneur through that philosophy, through that paradigm, so that as it begins to take off, delegation is not a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. As it begins to take off, they've thought about supply chain issues pretty early on. And that's whether you're doing something with a product or even if you're offering a service, you still have vendors that you count on who have to be able to scale with you. And we help them sort through the terms that they need to have in contracts that allow them to grow and take advantage of volume discounts and these kinds of things. So, no, we're not at all hoping that they don't grow. We hope they do grow quickly, but we hope that they have planned growth.
Wow. Well, I'm sitting here thinking about 20 or 30 different people that should be members of. Do you call them members of Entredot?
We call them associates.
Associates of
yes.
Entredot. So, if somebody listening right now is thinking to themselves, I really could kind of use this help, where do they go?
www.entredot.org, and Entredot is spelled Entredot.
Excellent. Well, you guys have some really interesting things in common. I think that there are some really interesting lessons that you both have to share. If there was one thing we didn't talk about that you think you would like to share with the entrepreneurial community out there, what might you say? I'm putting you kind of on the spot here,
I think
Mark,
they should talk to Entredot.
You think they should talk to Entredot?
Well, the reason is because I've sitting here listening to this and... you know, I left AT&T cushy confines of, you know, sitting there and being a developer to start my own business. Extremely naive. And all the things he said, are right on the money. I mean, it's exactly things that I can relate to at a point in time that, and I've worked with some of the entrepreneurships program at Wake Forest a little bit a few years ago, and it's funny to see all of the great ideas that people have out there. I mean, I love that part about entrepreneurship, but making it happen is a whole nother ballgame. And the things that you mentioned are just spot on. I mean, any help you can get. And I think it's true. I've seen it. You know, people like, I'm going with my gut. I know what I'm talking about. I've been doing this forever, right? And I don't need any help, but they do.
You got to have a sizable ego to be an entrepreneur to begin with. Yeah, you can't be shy about it, right? So,
well, you know, listening to Mark talk, I was just impressed that it's almost like the data has gotten ahead of the small business owner's ability to use that data. There's so much data available, and in what we talk to the entrepreneurs about in terms of segmenting their marketplace and coming up with target market customers, the data will allow you to serve one niche after another. But if you're not paying attention to those niches, then you can fall into this one-size-fits-all plan to try and take your product or service to market. And, you know, like I tell people in workshops all the time, if everyone is your customer, no one's your customer.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You mentioned your subscription model. You also used the word graduated from the program. So is there a particular time cycle, or can someone join in at any point in time? And
yeah, we hope that they don't need us long term. We hope that an associate who comes to us within 6 to 18 months, usually 6 to 12. Some people do this bivocationally. You have to think about the person who's starting a business on the side while they still have a full-time job.
Okay.
And they would kind of fall in the broader range category. But, yeah, typically in 6 to 9 months, we can help someone go from an idea to a commercially viable venture.
And they can start anytime?
Yes. And we have an assessment tool called a 6-step prep test to see how prepared they are to start a business, and it helps them to figure out where in the 6-step process they should spend most of their time.
That's great.
Now, are you only focused here in North Carolina?
We are, as we move towards the Google Helpouts platform, looking to go more broadly across the country and perhaps across the world.
Fantastic. That's great.
I was just going to say that the whole delegating part, I think, is extremely difficult for business owners. I mean, I still struggle with it, you know, because you want to make sure everything's done right.
Right.
You know, so there's probably some stuff I still need to learn that you could probably help me with. But that, and I'll say one other thing about knowing your market is, I think one of the most important things that we learned, because I have partners at Beacon that I work with, was I thought it was very valuable to define who you're not going to do business with.
Absolutely. You
know, and yeah. I think a lot of people forget that part, because when you're a startup, you're like, you're going to pay me, I'm ready, I'll do it. But if you define what you're not going to do and who you're not going to work with, that helps probably more so than who you are going to do business with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in addition to helping them define the target market, we also work for a very long period of time up front on what is their business model. You know, going back to what you were talking about, is it going to be multi-channel? You know, are they going to have an online sales process? Are they going to have an in-person? Are they going to have both? Are they going to use sales reps? Are those reps going to be internal or external? Are they going to use distributors and agents? And
it's a lot. Just a lot.
It is a lot.
And how do you receive payments? Do you do a swipe on an attachment to your smartphone, or do you do an internet transaction? Or, you know, there's so many different considerations that it can be numbing for the entrepreneur, and just helping them sort through that is one of the services we provide.
Well, I'm curious. So you mentioned business model. So, you know, business models in a lot of businesses have changed dramatically in the last 10 years. The advent of the internet obviously changed a lot of those business models. Is the business model on Main Street changing?
It definitely is. We're seeing people have to be cognizant of being not just local, not just online and local, but online, local, and global. And, you know, because your competition now is not next door.
Right.
They're on the other side of the world.
Yeah, it's not even across town.
Right.
Right.
And exactly. You have to be mindful of that in putting together a business model that can scale. And where a lot of American entrepreneurs fail at that is they don't think of that in terms of their sourcing strategies.
Uh-huh.
You know, our larger corporations have started sourcing from other parts of the world, but your typical small business would not think of using something like Elance.com to source a logo from right. somebody in India or
sure.
China,
right.
and they could get it a lot more
less
affordably,
yeah.
right.
you know, and,
right.
and allow them to watch their cost.
Yep.
Well, we've certainly learned a lot about things to be thinking about how to grow your business here today. I really appreciate both of the guests coming on board, and I appreciate the great questions from Cal. Thank you both.
And thank you.
The best to you.
Appreciate the opportunity.
I think we're going to have you both back just sometime soon. Talk about this some more.
Thank you.
I could talk forever. The entrepreneurship thing is a lot of fun to talk about.
It certainly is. Well, for Ann and for Cal and for Reed, this is Ann Revelle-Petcher signing off for this edition of Metro Raleigh Business Radio. Until next time.